everyone. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. This is year two of PWT Talks NXT, the very beginning of year two, of course. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host, joined as usual with two of the other rotating guys. We watch NXT and we talk about it. I went to an NXT show about 10 days ago, wrote a little piece about it. That went up on The Torch, so you can find that. It's under the NXT Tracker banner, even though it's not a typical NXT Tracker. It's about how it was a very good house show and the art of creating a house show that makes people want to go to more house shows, feel like you're missing something, even though you know more than 99% of the time nothing really is going to happen. So there you go. You can do that. You can also email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We got 6 emails this week, but 4 were about the call-ups, so we're going to get those out of the way at the beginning of the show, and then we're going to go ahead and talk about the call-ups, how they might move the needle, what the call-ups mean, and a whole lot of things about that. That's going to be much of our show, because there aren't a lot of things on this week's NXT to talk about, because our main event was very long, and that means there weren't a lot of segments to cover. So let me get to our other two talkers today. Talkers, does that work for you guys? Let's start with Justin James.
Hi, I'm Justin James. You can find me at Twitter at Justin_M_James.
Wow, you went up like you were going to keep talking. You faked me out.
I was about to say something kind of smart, Weisenheimer, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to say that. And yeah, it's kind of like when Vic Joseph, he's an expert at sounding like he's throwing a break and he isn't.
Right. I always love that when they sound like it sounds like they're practicing to throw to break. Can he get back in it? And then, you know, the match just keeps going.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. And they do this on NXT a lot. And I think it's because, like, remember when they actually were doing a lot more mid-match breaks because they're airing it on USA or something?
Yep.
And I that's when it kind of started.
Right.
And I think – I suspect that maybe somewhere in the world, NXT actually gets broadcast with, like, mid-match breaks, and that's what they're throwing to. That's my suspicion.
Well, you got to get your daily fix of Vic Joseph. And you'll be clean as a whistle. We also have Tom Staupe here.
Yep. What an introduction. Yes, at Tom Staupe on Twitter. I do the tapings reports, and there's still one taping left to go in this one. So if you're avoiding spoilers, don't go back and read the extra details there yet, quite yet. And I also have a house show report from this past Thursday up now on The Torch. I will try to get to some of that in this show, but we'll see how long we go. If I don't get to it, it's right there on The Torch for you. It was a fun show, and you can check it out there.
Sweet. I look forward to that. I did not know that was up. Okay, so we've got a bunch of emails. I'm going to knock out one by one here. These are all about the call-ups, more or less, so I'm going to cover them all at once. And sorry, I'm about to kill my voice here by reading all these back to back, but they're all about the call-ups. Let's start with Chris Fielder. Hey, bros. So watching Heavy Machinery tonight, one would think that they stand a pretty good chance of dethroning Undisputed Era of their NXT Tag Team Championships. But after watching Raw and SmackDown this week, we all know that Dozier and Tucky are getting called up to the main roster. For me, that kind of spoils the belief that they might win the titles. I know Vince was quick to pull the trigger on advertising in advance the NXT call-ups because of the horrendous ratings that both shows have garnered the last 2 weeks, but I really wish we could have held out for at least another week so we could see the championship match first. I know it's being picky, but it's little things like this that make me not enjoy WWE as much as I could. It's not a huge deal, but as Wade Keller says every week, it's death by a thousand cuts when it comes to Vince and others in charge not sweating the small details that us wrestling fans think are important. Also, I forgot to mention last week that everyone was making a big deal about Heavy Machinery being undefeated in the last 6 months, and during an interview segment, Bobby Fish says, "So was I." It's the little things like that that make me absolutely love Bobby Fish, and I pray to Vince he gets his fair chance at being a legit superstar. Thoughts, opinions? Definitely not going to disagree on some of this stuff being given away. We'll get there. As for Fish, he's older than you usually want in like a major superstar, but God, I love him all around. But we'll get to all the other stuff there. Let me move on to JB. Hello, team. JB from Detroit. My first question this week centers around the news that the main roster is looking to shake things up in the next few months before the Rumble and Mania. On this week's Raw, it was advertised that there will be a fresh crop of call-ups in the near future, including Lars Sullivan, Lacey Evans, Nikki Cross, Heavy Machinery, and EC3. I could be missing a few, as I typically fast-forward through much of Raw. I don't think you are. Are you at all worried that Vince might purge NXT too quickly of main event talent? With the ratings being in the tank, I'm a little concerned that he might sacrifice NXT for a short-term main roster fix. Second question is on the news that Nick Miller of the Mighty and NXT have parted ways. Do you think that the Mighty had any chance at a future on NXT, or were they in the pecking order they were going to stay at regardless? What do you think of a potential Shane Thorne singles run in NXT, as they've been testing that out on the touring circuit? As always, love the show. That is JB. Okay, Kevin Catani. I hope this go-home-to-Christmas email finds you all well. My first question is, should WWE have waited to announce Lacey Evans and Heavy Machinery's call-ups? Okay, that's kind of redundant. Could Vince held that card in his hand for another 2 weeks? Could they have found more dopey squashes for Dijakovic and Heavy Machinery? At 6'5 and 268 pounds, I think I'd look at least more convincing than them. Thanks as always, and happy holidays to you all. Office hours are over for the holidays. The Professor, Kevin Catani. And finally, Brian Alston. I'm glad you're... can't read that. That's going to be something that he emailed us for later, and that'll be fun when we're all four on the show. Raw and SmackDown announced 6 NXT call-ups. Which person or team should have been called up a long time ago, and which person could have used another 6 to 9 months of seasoning before jumping? Thanks, Brian Alston. Okay. I also see that Brian Alston is our official Torch correspondent for the 2019 Royal Rumble weekend. I tell you what, man, I'm still thinking about getting back to Phoenix, and if I do, hopefully we can shake hands. Anyway, so, guys, lots to unpack there. I think I would like to focus partially on who could have used more seasoning and who should have been called up earlier of the call-ups. But anything else that I talked about, that Shane Thorne, I have seen Shane Thorne in a singles match live because he was at the first house show I was at. But let me
did it feel 10 minutes longer than your stopwatch said it was?
I liked it. I liked it. But he was against it was supposed to be the Mighty against the Revival, and it was a singles match because Dawson was nursing an injury. But there was a lot of fun cheating. He was using a crutch that he didn't have to use, and that got involved, and it was fun. But anyway, Justin, since you went ahead and talked, let's throw to you first on these call-ups and things you might think about all of our questions.
All right, so I think Nikki Cross was overdue, and I know we've talked about this like 8,000 times, so I know we're all going to agree on Nikki Cross. I think that EC3 was way too early. I think he's still trying to figure out – it's not that his in-ring stinks. That's not the issue. It's just that we've only seen a couple decent promos for him where we all didn't just hate it and roll our eyes, and he's still trying to figure out who his character is, and those are things that NXT is really good at doing. So I think that he needed some more time to really settle in, figure out a character that was clicking. You know, he may be getting lots of cheers because, you know, this whole NX3 and this and that, but that's an NXT gimmick. Yeah. That's not a main roster gimmick.
And it seems like he's finding it here too. Like he's just starting to the last couple weeks, so heartbreaking.
Exactly. He just started clicking with me and with us. And you're like, oh, you know, like too early. Lacey Evans, I think that it's perfect timing for her. I think she's really found her stride as a character, but she hasn't gotten stale like Nikki Cross has. She's ready. Lars Sullivan, I'm going to call him debatable because I think his in-ring is fine. I think his character is fine, but he hasn't found a way to connect to the audience either. And, you know, people boo him, but it just feels more like this guy again heat rather than, oh, I hate this guy heat. And Heavy Machinery, I say they're debatable as well because it wasn't until that last vignette that they did, that last promo that they did, that I really felt that they carried themselves like, please forgive me for using this word, superstars, rather than, you know, jamokes. You know, they could always do a decent promo, but I just feel like they just really, like EC3, like they just started getting it. In that vignette or promo, whatever it was, that we just universally like dumped a whole bunch of praise on. So that's my evaluations. In terms of the call-up timing, yeah, it sucks for us NXT fans. I recognize that Vince could not care less about NXT fans. It's just a side effect of being an NXT fan. And you know, my buddy Paul wouldn't have done this to me. I know that. This wasn't Triple H doing me wrong. This was Vince. He had foretells. Big deal. If you had, it would be hard for me to buy Heavy Machinery beating Disputed Era anyways.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead there and throw in on the title matches. Lacey wasn't probably going to win that number one contenders match anyway.
Yeah, thanks.
The Heavy Machinery definitely was not going to win that title match. So, you know, that's kind of a giveaway. So not – at least we're not getting spoiled on really, really up-in-the-air results, because I don't think those results are going to surprise us. And the women, I'm not 100%. I think it'll be Bianca, but I'm not 100%. I know that it wasn't going to be Lacey. That wouldn't have made sense here. So as far as – yeah, this is one of those situations where Vince is more than happy to make that sacrifice. I think those of us that are super, super into NXT and love it, sometimes I think fans can forget that way fewer people watch NXT than the main roster for a myriad of reasons, whether it be access or whether it be people just thinking of the main roster and I don't want to say more markish. I hate that term at times, but like they think of those as the superstars worth watching because they're already there, whether or not the show is well put together or not. But more people watch Raw and SmackDown by far than NXT. So this was a small sacrifice to them. And the truth is, those of us watching NXT aren't going to stop, and we're not going to be affected by that just because we knew who was going to win those matches anyway, or we knew who wasn't going to win those matches anyway. Let me throw to you, Tom Stout.
Way, way past my window on it. But every time you talk about getting to Phoenix, I'm going to get Isaac Hayes stuck in my head. And I thank you for that. We'll see if that happens. So the call up announcement was a bit of a pat ourselves on the back moment, I think, because at least for myself, thinking about what possibly could Vince announce, and on my list of ideas that ranged from what I thought were pretty good ideas to utterly terrible ideas that were outside the realm of realism, my guesses did not include that he would essentially announce nothing, which is kind of what happened. But later in the show, we got the call-up announcements, and those were toward the top of my list. I was like, what would be something exciting to do for the main roster right now? Why not just send a bunch of NXT people up, and here we are. And for the most part, these were all people that we had predicted going up very soon because the timing feels right for them. I personally was thinking that it would be, for the reasons that you guys pointed out, fun to see a little bit more of EC3 going into 2019. But I think you guys did as well. And Harley definitely did say that this guy will be up very soon. He might show up as an entrant in the Rumble or something. So these were all people that we had earmarked as going up soon. And for me personally, I think that the timing is right for just about all of them. It does seem like Cross could have gone up much sooner in a variety of capacities, although I've had fun with her sticking around on the Yellow brand, so I'm not personally complaining about that. And one of the good things about this, too, I think, is that for as good as most of these acts, actually, I mean, pretty much all of them have been in NXT, I feel like pretty much all of their stories have been told, again, with a little bit of the exception of EC3, but he wasn't really on a trajectory. So while we were enjoying seeing his growth, I don't feel like we're really having too much taken away from us just from watching this program. So while when we think about them and I don't, if we really want to choose to think about it, we might miss them on NXT. But I don't think they're going to be leaving too much of a gap. I don't feel like NXT has been pillaged. There's such depth in the Performance Center and people vying to get on TV that I don't think we're going to notice too much of a blip in the presentation here. So I'm optimistic about that. People like Heavy Machinery, Lacey Evans, maybe even Lars. I think they will reach higher echelons on the main roster than they did in NXT, at least for their, you know, characters and kayfabe and everything like it. We've talked about it before. Heavy Machinery, Lacey Evans, we don't really see them as championship contender characters, but on the main roster, that could be a completely different story.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
So, let's see, does that cover basically all the questions? I think that about covers it. I don't have any thoughts on Shane Thorne because I haven't seen him work singles matches. That's a sight to be seen for me. I would certainly be open to it because obviously the Mighty were not schlubs. It was just in how they were presented. Yeah. So
something you said, Tom, that I wanted to add on to is, you know, this isn't a great loss for NXT. None of these people, you know, Lars especially was in this weird spot of being so strong, he really should have been in the main title scene or much closer to the main title scene, but he wasn't for a variety of reasons. They didn't clear out the top level of talent, right? Your top talent's still Gargano, Ciampa, Black, for the, you know, and Dream for the men, for the women, you know, for the women you've still got, you know, Baszler, Sane. In fact, I'm kind of stunned that they didn't grab Sane, except she's in the middle of this program. Yeah, they didn't clear out the top talent. They cleared out the upper mid card. And that's going to leave a lot of room for people like Keith Lee to start being able to breathe a little bit. People like, hopefully, Punishment Martinez, Fabian Aichner, Raul Mendoza, Humberto Carrillo. Hopefully we can see more time for these folks now that, you know, some of the folks have been cleared out.
100%. And I've been getting the feeling that this is kind of another conversation, but that certain people like Ciampa and Gargano are the kind of people that aren't looking at call-ups soon, that NXT still wants to keep building around them and holding onto them and selling shows on them because they've been so beneficial to the brand.
At the risk of sounding like an echo chamber, I think that this is a really great set of call-ups because it does not necessarily deplete NXT's main storylines or anything like that. EC3 had a storyline going on, but not the kind of storyline that was integral to titles and things like that, and I don't think it was going to head that way. Maybe he would have gotten a match with Cole, I'm not sure, but I don't know. Yeah, probably would have, but whatever. We can see that down the road. These, I would say all these acts, who knows about Nikki? Like, we all worry about Nikki. But Lars, Heavy Machinery, Lacey, and EC3, these are all acts that are going to probably do better on the main roster than they did in NXT. Not that any of them did overly poorly, but they're all really built for that larger-than-life space, and I think this is going to be good for them. I think it's going to be good for NXT and who they got coming up because they have a glut of talent just aching to be in bigger spots or to have a spot at all. I think this is going to work out all around. I'm not going to sit here and get all rostery about who's going to be on what show yet. We'll let that happen. The one other question that I want to throw to you guys before we move on to the show proper is, are you bummed that there's going to be no surprise factor on any of these six people, five acts, showing up on the main roster? Because now we know they're all coming, so we don't get that surprise entrance, that surprise, like Paige showing up on the main roster the night after WrestleMania. That was a big deal, and she won the title, which was a bigger deal. We don't get any of that now. We don't get the big surprise, and suddenly 10 minutes later, they've won a big match. is that a bullet they should have kept in the chamber?
I don't think that any of these folks were going to be used like that. I don't think any of them warranted that kind of surprise. They've been running vignettes on Lars Sullivan.
Which I agree with. Yep.
They had been, you know, Nikki Cross has been on SmackDown before that was her moment a couple weeks ago when she had her surprise appearance. Heavy Machinery is not going to move the needle much. Lacey Evans is not going to move the meat needle much. These are people who, it's like, Lacey Evans or Heavy Machinery suddenly showing up. What's Heavy Machinery going to do? Someone defeat the Usos? No. That's not where they are. So
EC3 strikes me as the one where they could have maybe done that because he does have presence.
And like history.
There's gaps in who he is and what he is, and there are gaps, but he seems like the one who maybe could have benefited from a surprise first showing up in the Rumble or wherever.
I just can't see him without thinking of Bobby Roode.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. Tom, any other comment or shall I?
Yeah, no, this absolutely occurred to me. And at first I was a little bit like, well, lumping them all together and even throwing Lars in there after he'd already had packages running. Does that take away from each individual? And I actually don't think so, because we've seen enough poor NXT call ups that weren't prefaced ahead of time that I like the fact that each act is getting a video package here, even though they're all being run together. And to varying degrees, each video package is pretty darn good, especially EC3's, added the fact that that is the last one that you see. And specific to EC3, I'm very optimistic. I mean, we'll see what happens, but I'm very optimistic about his translation to the main roster for the obvious reasons that everyone talks about, but also because if they want to go with the top 1% as a heel, as it was originally intended, they can do that much more easily on the main roster. I think that he would be embraced as a bad guy much more readily on the main roster than and by the audiences that the main roster plays in front of, as opposed to on NXT, especially NXT shows in Orlando, where, you know, the fans here know EC3. So excited to see what they do there. And you know what? We don't know how these people are coming in yet and on what shows. And I even just as we record this last night, watching SmackDown, I guess it's sad to say that, you know, there's enough wrestling out there that a pretty seemingly inconsequential tag match between four amazing wrestlers, just top of the world wrestlers in Almas, Brian, Styles, and Ali. Like, why wouldn't I want to see that? But it's just another Tuesday, and I was thinking about turning it off and going to do something different. The reason I stayed tuned is because I knew that they had just announced these NXT acts, and maybe one of them's going to interfere. That didn't happen, but I think that surprise is still there. If we've narrowed down who's going to come out, it's not a total surprise, but we don't know when and we don't know how. So I think that so they can have their, is still in the air.
Yeah, have their cake and eat it too.
There you go.
Yep, we give you that, and then we can roll them out slow. So maybe it'll all be okay, and Raw and SmackDown will have great ratings for the rest of time. So, first match of this week's show, Io Shirai and Dakota Kai versus Duke and Shafir. Fun stuff as a story, but really hard for me just because Kai got hurt, and it's a real bummer. So still don't know a whole lot about that, or at least I don't. I don't know if there's news out there, but I don't. Nothing I've seen yet as of this recording. So I had some TV and connection issues because we had a power outage here in Minnesota. Not the whole state. We're fine. But for like 25 minutes here. So I saw the end of this match. I saw that they won. Morrow called them a neophyte tag team, kind of suggesting that maybe that this was going to be a team for a while. Obviously, that won't be the case, depending on how long Dakota is hurt, but Io and Dakota over Duke and Shafir. Tom, any comment on this match?
Not too much, to be honest. I guess that's maybe a good thing, considering, because none of us have seen Duke and Shafir work too much so far. Kelly, you and I have seen Duke work singles matches at house shows now. The only time I'd ever seen Shafir work before was in a battle royal, and she was somewhat hidden, as you tend to be in battle royals. But there was nothing here that kind of made me cringe, as we've all sort of expected. Like the first time we saw Baszler, the first time we saw Rousey, and everything, and you know, I'm not like blown away the way I was with Baszler and Rousey, and I don't think we're supposed to be right now with the way they're being presented. But there's nothing that's giving me pause, so I'm currently enjoying seeing Duke and Shafir, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing their progression. I think these two, I'm particularly honing in on Duke right now. Are going to be fun to watch improve. I've got a close eye on them.
Are you surprised that, given the fact that they kind of have a built-in storyline, were you surprised to see him do the job here? Or did you think that as the younger team that they were going to probably end up doing the job here?
Trying to take myself back to the night. I think there was some modicum of surprise, perhaps a little bit of relief as well, because I think if they just ended up being dominant, whether it was through nefarious means or clean, I think it might have felt like a little eye rolling, like, oh yeah, of course we're going this route. Right. So I think this tempers them in a way that makes me more ready to accept them, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Doing a few jobs can be really, really good for fans accepting certain acts, especially when there is potential backlash in the mix. When somebody's tied to, say, Roman Reigns, I think people are ready to boo that person. So if you start to do some jobs or Roman Reigns himself, or John Cena, who jobbed like the whole year of, I don't remember, it was like 2012 or 11 or something like that. He did jobs at like every pay-per-view. And it helped. So, I definitely understand kind of where you're headed with that. I don't know that I had a call for who would win this. I felt that we got the right winners, but I would not have been surprised to see them speed the plow here. I'm glad they didn't, because there's some work to be done with Duke and Shafir, but I'm excited to see where they're headed. Justin, anything else on this match?
I think the booking here really shows that you shouldn't debut two highly anticipated people against one very highly liked person, one highly anticipated person. This was a booking no-win situation. Shafir and Duke, for all their talking, for the fact that they're associated with Baszler, for all the, you know, for all their legit background that would lead one to think that they should be real tough cookies, they need some wins. Like, and, you know, Io Shirai and Dakota Kai, well, Io Shirai is no slouch. She won the Mae Young Classic. Dakota Kai is a nearly winless jobber. And losing to a team involving her is painful.
She's like 50-50.
No, she's like don't let your love for her override your reason. She's like a winless jobber.
That's definitely not true, but go on.
She can't even beat Shayna Baszler. And
who does? What a stupid
Kairi Sane does. Kairi Sane's not a winless jobber.
You're such a mark. Go on.
I mean, I like Dakota Kai. She just doesn't get many wins. Or if she does get wins, they're over like Vanessa Bourne. They don't count. She doesn't have any wins over anyone like top tier. So I just think that, like, I just feel like this match felt like the blow off match to a feud, and it was just poorly positioned. Like, it should not have been the first match for Duke and Shafir. They needed some wins. They needed some credibility. And now it's going to be this like dumb thing where they start beating up Kai and Shirai or something to get their heat back. And that's just like main roster, even Steven booking.
It's weird.
I don't like it.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's weird that on a show with two enhancement matches, these two weren't booked in one of them. Like, it's really strange to me. Like,
exactly.
This is the place for enhancement matches.
Yeah, this should have been a TakeOver Phoenix match.
Yeah.
So this should have either been a TakeOver Phoenix match or a main event, like, a week or two before Phoenix, after these two teams spent, you know, the next couple of weeks building up some credibility. Shirai, if anybody was going to make the pin, Shirai was the right one. And this match was so short, I didn't get to see much of Duke and Shafir. In some ways, they looked green-ish. In some ways, they looked potentially fun. So,
I think the idea is not to show you a lot, whether that's because we're hiding them and working on them behind the scenes. Because like Tom said, we saw a couple of Duke singles matches as a result of the injury to Kai and some reshuffling of the card. And she was okay. She's a work in progress. I saw Peyton Royce at a similar time in her I saw Peyton Royce versus Daria Baronato, who is now known as Sonya Deville, both in early NXT at a house show, and it was pretty rough, and the fans were rough on them and chanted the "you can't wrestle" or whatever like that, and it was just like, dude, they're literally working. They did that to Duke when I was at that show 10 days ago too.
Ouch.
And Wade and I are both incredulous. It's like she's literally in NXT to learn. Like, that is what this – that's what this is. And it was pretty cold, because in Minnesota you don't hear a lot of that. Like, we're usually pretty cool about it. We're usually a hot crowd, and we're usually not too hard on folks. But I don't know. NXT is a little bit more – hardcore fan, and I guess maybe like the sort of fan who just can't deal with a work in progress or put that into or take that into account. I thought it was disappointing.
For what it's worth, at the house show I was at this past Thursday in Orlando, it's in Castleberry, but they call it, I don't know, whatever. It's NXT Orlando. She wrestled Mia Yim, her real life roommate. And you always hit your friends harder. As a result of that, this match was actually one of the highlights on the show, because Mia and Jessamine were just beating the snot out of each other, and you could hear them caving in each other's chest. It was pretty great. And Mia Yim won with, oh, who did she say? It's a move that she said she learned from Shane Helms, because I guess he was hanging out at the Performance Center recently. Okay. And it looks like a modified version of the Eat Defeat Soul Food move that she uses as her finish. But she hits him with her knee instead of her foot. But anyway, yeah, it actually was quite a good match. And I think that's because she and Yim, Jessamine and Mia, know each other very well.
Yeah, I got Duke versus Candace, and it was okay. But it was not surprising when we all figured out that it was an audible, because it seemed very kind of rushed and thrown together. And it was literally the night before that Dakota got injured at Green Bay or something like that. So, was it Green Bay?
Yeah, which I guess just it's – sorry, go ahead. I'm talking over you. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's your thing. It's cool. But, yep. But it was – what the hell? You know what? You might as well go ahead now, because you threw me off.
Well, shucks. Yeah, no, I was just going to give some credit to our listener, Patrick Alog, who did follow up and send us a little email about his in-arena perspective of the injury. And He honestly, he was very honest with us. He just doesn't know anything much more than we do. It was sort of an under the radar thing. And because there were because it was a match between teams rather than a one on one, it wasn't something that just halted the show. They were able to continue with the match. So, but just wanted to give him a little shout out because I appreciate that follow up.
Yeah, absolutely. Still don't know exactly where it happened. I doubt we'll ever know when exactly it happened, but hope to see you back, Dakota. Then we got a couple of pieces, Dijakovic and Matt Riddle, a couple of backstage things, not backstage necessarily with Matt Riddle, giving a little interview. My wife was down at the time and said, so, Stoner, that's not the way they've been going. So she had not seen Riddle yet, so she was a little taken aback by that whole thing. Not sure why we got a Dijakovic vignette when he was going to be wrestling like 3 minutes later, but whatever. So we got that, and then we got Riddle, and then we got Dijakovic versus Aaron Mackey with his, you know what, I liked his gear, I will say that, and he was the kind of guy that Dijakovic could throw around real nice and easy. So anything on Dijakovic or Riddle, Tom?
These are the kind of squash matches I like. Another thing that I saw at the house show was a Punishment Martinez match where he worked babyface against a guy who looked like Freddie Mercury had bought a Macho Man costume off of eBay.
Oh, and you sent us that picture and it was fantastic. I love it.
And seeing the guy in person is fantastic too. But the match, I mean, Punishment is awesome. And I'm saying that with very, very little experience with watching him. He's already made quite an impression on me. But it was one of those matches where you're mostly watching the guy who's there to be squashed. And he was putting Martinez in submission holds quite a bit until Martinez finally hit a choke slam. And this with Dijakovic was not that. And I feel like it's much more effective. I'm very interested in NXT has me exactly where they want me with Dijakovic. I am paying attention to this guy. I want to download his theme song and work out to it at the gym. When Mauro said, if you want to create a pro wrestler in a laboratory, this is the kind of guy you come up with, which is like his version of what JBL says about Randy Orton. When he said that, it echoed exactly what I was already thinking about him. I'm very excited to see where he goes, and I like that he's not having to sell for 40 or for like 75% of his squash match.
100%. That is something I thought too. With a guy this size, it doesn't make any sense that he would do it, but that has not stopped them before. Justin, I know you love squash matches. What about this one?
So if there's one thing I like as much as squash references, it's references to what movie series?
I mean, Rocky, right?
Okay. So between his look, the promos, the name, and the way Ronaldo talked about it, all I could think of was Dolph Lundgren, Rocky IV.
Yeah, made in a lab.
Yeah, made in a lab. You know, he's got that haircut. You know, I mean, I know that Dijakovic is not a Russian name, but you know, it's got the Eastern European flavor. And I'm just waiting for him to like go up against like, I don't know, Lars Sullivan and say something like, I cannot break him, he's made of iron. Right? I can't wait. This was so much fun. That vertical suplex he did, it was like a release vertical suplex. And it was so hot. It was like this little dude went flying across the ring. And I know
warned
that
him. He warned him. Now it's time to fly.
I know that I believe it was Kevin Catani's like, you know, I don't look more realistic. I don't care about realistic. He's not going to throw 6'5", 283 pounds across the ring. I don't want to see realistic. I don't want to see him fighting a guy that's his weight and his size and still winning. I want to see him facing – I want to see him beating up Leo Rush. I want to see him beat up Humberto Carrillo, Raul Mendoza, and Fabian Aichner in a 3-on-1 handicap match.
Whoa.
And I like all three of them. I want to see
him. I love all three of them. Hold on.
I love all three of them, and I want to see I want to see it be a bloody disgusting match. I want to see like somebody get their nose broken. I want to see somebody, you know, cut themselves. I want to see, oh, this will be great. Like Dijakovic, and we've seen him before, and I ranted and raved about him then. Dijakovic is what Lars Sullivan could be. right? Like this giant monster. And Sullivan squashes are the same kind of squashes where like this humiliating bloodlust comes out of me. And I just want to see somebody come near death, like legit death, in a match with this guy. And it's just, they just bring out this part of me that I'm ashamed of, like this part of me that would, you know, that shouldn't be elected president.
Should I mute you?
And
like, so you don't like incriminate
I'm never playing. I'm never playing to run for office. Don't worry.
Perfect. Okay, we're good. So it would stop you in this day and age. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it'd probably be a benefit, you know. But mm-hmm. you know, I just these kinds of matches are the parts of me that used to like watching football and watching people get hit hard, you know. And I just enjoyed them. And Dijakovic did it so well. Great match. Matt Riddle interview. Okay, yeah, Keanu Reeves wants his job back. Let's move on.
On Dijakovic, we were saying Dijakovic last week. This week, all the announcers said Dijakovic. And now I'm second-guessing myself. Did they change or did we? So we'll see what happens. I know they said Dijakovic today, and I took note of that. But anyway, besides
all I know is that my eyes had to unbutton their pants because they feasted.
Oh, yes, they sure did. Enough with the catchphrasing. That felt very forced. Otherwise,
I couldn't stand that. Like, it's bad enough that Aleister Black has to say fade to black like every chance he gets.
Yeah.
But now we've got a guy whose finishing move is named his catchphrase.
Catchphrase. That is unfortunate.
Yeah. Like, oh my goodness, that'd be like if Heavy Machinery's finisher was called the stakes and weights.
You're right. Which, you know what? I could easily see that. That I could see that easier than this. But yeah, nice. This is everything I want in a squash match too. It was loads of fun. It's a tough sell sometimes to take one of those foregone conclusions and make me actually as excited for it as the big matches or more so. And I felt that way about this one.
This is why Keith Lee should not be having a competitive match against Luke Benzies where he takes three quarters of the offense.
Yes.
This is why Matt Riddle should not be having a competitive 4-minute match against Marcel Barthel, who gets 3 minutes of offense against him.
And
because I don't get hyped about those guys. Like, I'm now hyped against Dijakovic, who's arguably a less interesting character.
Yeah, and that's why you get time off from TV for guys like Keith Lee, because they're like, I don't know if somebody realizes they dropped the ball or if they just don't figure out that that maybe he shouldn't have been in a position to give that much offense. I think Keith Lee will be fine, especially in the wake of all these call-ups and spots that have to be filled. But yeah, that's just a stupid mistake you don't have to make. Anyway, moving on. We have the announcement that next week the Fatal 4-Way for the women is set. Whew, this is going to be hot. Bianca Belair, Io Shirai, Mia Yim and Lacey Evans, lots of big personalities, lots of wrestling talent. I cannot wait for this. I can't help but be annoyed at how little we've seen Bianca on our televisions in the last couple of weeks. This is a superstar, one of your best superstars. So unless you're just trying not to overexpose her, which I get, get her on TV because she's such a highlight. But if she wins this match, it won't matter because then we'll see plenty of her because she will be able to boast about the finish. Tom, real quick, there's one more week from this taping, right? You've seen this match?
Yes, and I have a suspicion that there will be one other match that will be added to like a year-end retrospective that we'll get in the week following. Okay. We'll see how they divvy things up. But yes, there's one. At least one more traditional week of television from the current taping.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Okay, and you know what? This is something that I just thought of out of nowhere. You were talking about the match you saw where you had to see somebody do his finisher three times.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
Jack
to air?
Marker.
Oh, we never gave that away, Justin. Now the world knows.
That Jackson Riker's garbage wrestler.
I know that it was
Jackson Riker. Sorry, guys. Thanks, Tom. If you hadn't spoiled it for me, Tom, I wouldn't spoil it for anyone else because I don't watch spoilers.
There you go.
Thank you, Tom. It's Tom's fault.
But so is that match going to air? Is that going to make air? I have no idea. The Forgotten Sons.
I would imagine, you know, having had to film it three times, I'm guessing that they were able to edit it together. Again, at that house show, Jackson Riker had a match, and he had a match against Aleister Black, and he did not try for the slingshot, or he tried for the slingshot powerbomb, but got reversed. And it's just the sort of thing where it's like, I know this guy's an experienced wrestler. He's worked plenty of other places, but I don't know what you do with it when it looked that bad, and it looked that bad in front of an audience. The slingshot powerbomb, you can imagine how that can go wrong. And I don't think he hurt the guy. I don't think he even came close to hurting the guy. They were able to do the move two more times, but it's just like, man, if you can't hit it, I don't know what you do about it. I don't want to be too mean because I don't really know. But the other unfortunate effect that you get from it is the last time I saw something like this that was not – sometimes they can just repeat a spot during a match. And I saw that happen recently when Rhea Ripley was working with – I believe it was Casey Catanzaro. And a spot went wrong and Rhea
redo spots all the time. It's unfortunate. But
and it was just during the match and it was seamless. Like if you didn't know to look for it or if you didn't know what was happening, you wouldn't have noticed that they were doing it so it could be edited later. The only time I've seen something that was clearly like, all right, let's restage this was with Fabian Aichner doing a springboard to the springboard splash to the outside. He was working babyface at the time, I believe. So the fact that he repeated the spot again and got a big pop from the audience worked. In this case, Jackson Riker having to do the move three times, the third time when he nailed it, and admittedly, it looked fantastic the third time he hit it, or the first time he hit it, but the third time he did it, that got a huge reaction from the audience because people were just happy to see him finally get it. But I don't think that's the reaction that you want for this guy who has just like a psychotic, vacant expression in his face and is trying to murder someone. So it's just – it's a situation where I don't want to be too mean by saying like maybe they need to rethink this guy. It was just one instance on one night, but it went very poorly. So
is that the look he's going for all this time? I thought he was having when he does that look. I thought he was meditating on what happened the last time he drank Waffle House coffee.
Oh, neat. So there you go. This episode forward compatible. So next week we'll just refer you to this episode if you want to hear what we thought about Jackson Riker. The next match was Heavy Machinery against, I wrote these names down, and I think they were Danny DiCardo and Luke Howell or some such. Heavy Machinery went over, and they will get the match that they lose to Undisputed Era next week. So, and then we will get the main event. We go right to, you know what? Before the main event, I'm going to get to our other two emails because otherwise I will forget to do them. Andrew Gamble says, any of you given NXT UK another chance? The more recent episodes have been filmed in a different venue with more traditional lighting and looks more like Full Sail, and the production is more in line with the main NXT product. The men's division seems to have some troublemaking stars outside of the British strong style trio, but some standouts include Fabian Aichner and Jordan Devlin. I think I like the potential of the women's division more than the NXT women's division. They built up Isla Dawn in the last few weeks, and I've become a fan of Xia Brookside and Killer Kelly. I'm looking forward to their upcoming TakeOver event, and if you haven't given it a chance in a while and you've got the time to give it, I'd recommend it giving another go. So, Andrew Gamble, I am backlogged and my life right now does not allow for much time for wrestling outside of, well, I'm up to date on New Japan and there aren't any shows for the next couple of weeks. So I think I'm going to be fine there. So I might get time to catch up. I have every intention of catching up. I actually love the first venue they did. I love that. So that's not a stumbling block for me. I'm into a show that is just getting its feet wet. I love Xia Brookside, by the way, from the tournament, and I can't wait to see her on the show. I know some of what's going to happen. I am going to give some time to this show and see where it heads. I did not know that they were doing a takeover event, so that has me even more excited. Thank you for letting me know, because I'm into that. You guys, I know, Justin, your time to give other than what you give to the Torch is pretty limited, so I doubt you are connected to that, as unless you tell me otherwise. Tom, are you up on the...
I was going to say, like, I'm not up on it, but the problem is like every week, like I keep saying let me catch up, but every week I fall behind, it becomes a bigger and bigger mountain to climb.
Oh I know that's my issue. Especially once TV shows.
Once I realized that they were doing like double episodes per week, like I think I was like on episode 3 or 4, maybe 5, and then I was like, something interrupted me, like I fell asleep, and then I was like, the next thing I know, I'm like, wait, now I'm like, am I 10 episodes behind now? 7? I don't know. That's like $1,000 worth of time.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm never going to catch up.
Yeah, I want to catch up on both that and 205. I like both of them as shows in general. I like the wrestling on them. For different reasons, 205, more established guys, and I love the excitement of watching a new show and seeing a bunch of characters kind of just get started and see where that builds. So I hope that I can give that more time. And I'll tell you what, Andrew, I don't know if you follow me on social anywhere or if you do it at all, but if you do, go ahead and bug me later and see if I've caught up, because now's not a great time, because this weekend I got my 15th wedding anniversary and all that, and then, you know, all those holidays and such. But I will try to catch up soon. Tom, are you up on that at all?
It very quickly fell into the column of too much wrestling for me, right next to 205. You know, just under the WWE umbrella, it's hard enough to keep track of everything, let alone outside of WWE. And I think the reason for that doesn't really have anything to do with the venue, although I know in response to a listener mail, we were asked to nitpick the venue here on the show. It's more due to the fact that I feel like they were taking too much time introducing me to who these characters are, which was sort of an odd inverse of what the issue was on 205, where with 205, I was actually tuning in just to see the action, and they were spending too much time telling me who the characters were, and they weren't very interesting in those regards. So, and I know that we're talking like 2 years ago with 205 at this point. I know the show's very different now. But I still tune in when I hear that a Rhea Ripley match has happened, and I think that this takeover, they said when it's going to happen, and I forget when. Is it as early as January? This takeover is going to be their chance to rope me back in. If they put on a good event with hooks, with narrative hooks that get me interested in some characters, then talk to me again after that, and we'll see.
So are they having...
Go on.
Are they having a UK-branded takeover, or are they having a match? Oh, I didn't even know.
Yep, I looked that up after we got the email. So, and I was going to say I'm weirdly obsessive about being a completist, so I'm hoping to catch up before that happens. But we'll see if that...
And that's exactly my problem. It's like I can't jump into it now. Like, I can't be like, oh, I missed 10 weeks or whatever. Let me just jump into it. And now I'm like, I have to catch up. And I know this is a personal defect. This is why I can't do NXT or New Japan or ROH. It's because I've missed like 30 years of these things.
You just said you can't do NXT, but I mean, that's what you do.
No, I've watched every single episode of NXT. I've watched every single episode of NXT from the very first one when there were a game show. I've not missed a single episode of this thing.
I'm just saying you started with I can't do NXT. So,
I meant New Japan and ROH. I meant TNA. TNA.
Okay. That makes
Impact
sense.
Wrestling.
Okay, we've got an email from Eric Schultz. I think that this, it could be Schultz. This is the first time that Eric has emailed us, I think. Hi, all. If you were tasked with adding a woman to Undisputed Era, who would each of you choose and why? I asked this question because they suggested they would collect all the titles in NXT, but they can't get the women's title. My pick goes cautiously to Aliyah, but I think they'd have to find a creative way to play it up. I thought somebody with more of a shared history would be better, but I couldn't think of anyone. My girlfriend Susie says she would pick Rhea Ripley, so they could have someone to hide behind. I'm not proposing that they actually do any of this, but speculating was kind of fun. Speculating is what we do, Eric. So I love this question. Obviously, they did very temporarily have Tainara Conti in Undisputed Era or Undisputed Era adjacent. And I thought that that was an okay spot for her. I got it from a sort of chicken shit sort of perspective. I got that from a character standpoint. I like what your girlfriend said about the idea of hiding behind Rhea, but I think that Rhea is going to be a centerpiece of NXT UK. I also love the pick of Aliyah because that could be a great boon to her. You take somebody who's not – somebody like Aliyah almost has to be added to a new group or stable or have that kind of packaging to come off as somebody who can win again. And if you put her in a position where other people can help her win and she can help other people win, that might be a great thing for her character's development, because I like Aliyah, but she's taken almost 100% jobs. So I like Aliyah as a choice there. Nobody else jumps out as a super obvious person to me right now. A lot of people would work. Mia Yim would work, but I just don't know what they want to do with these characters. If you're talking about the many, many that are coming up on their way, maybe somebody like a Reyna Gonzalez could be a muscle. I think it would be hilarious for her to work muscle for these guys who are in many ways chicken when they get stuck on their own. I would love that dynamic. I would love to see Reyna doing something like that. So maybe I just talked myself into Reyna being the person. Tom, what do you think?
Reyna also came to mind. I also got to see her work a singles match at this house show, and she was actually my pop of the night just because I've been so excited getting to see more singles matches out of her lately. She dominated Lacey Lane and then lost to a DDT, but that's fine. That came to mind. Our listeners are great. So often they send emails with interesting questions like this, and then they continue to offer their own ideas, and their own ideas echo stuff that I start thinking about when I'm reading the first half of the email. Rhea Ripley absolutely came to mind, obvious reasons, but, you know, the UK separation there, unless they, which now that Wolfgang seems to have his own stable over there, I don't think that made me think that, okay, they're probably not going to do what we were hypothesizing, that maybe they would do some sort of Bullet Club thing with Undisputed Era having a UK division as well, or faction or whatever, sect. Chapter. There we go.
Chapter,
but anyway,
perfect.
For what it's worth, I believe, you know, when we've discussed this before, I've said Dakota Kai because at the time I felt that she needs something of a jumpstart, and she got that jumpstart. So I would not say Dakota Kai anymore. I believe, and I don't think this would be putting words in his mouth unless he's changed his mind, Harley would say and has answered before Deonna Purrazzo due to the ROH connection.
Oh, right. Yeah.
There's another ROH connection. There have been some rumors floating around. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here, because I've seen these rumors floating around online in various places. So this is supposing that something might happen, but even, I don't know, whatever, regardless of the rumors, this is the name that came to mind. She was in the new Mae Young Classic, And when I think of Undisputed Era, I think of the ROH connection, and I think of somebody who has a mouth, and that person is Karen Q.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
It's I watched the Mae Young, this year's Mae Young, I watched in its entirety, but I got backlogged, so I watched a whole bunch of hours at a time, so I missed a lot of it. So there were some names there that that I would not have thought of. Is she she's all rumor right now. We don't know for sure.
Just,
that she
yeah. I saw it on Fightful. Just to credit them there, and it's just like pure rumor, like even lower level rumor than some of the other names that we've talked about as far as like class of January 2019 possibilities. But you know, I probably shouldn't have even mentioned it just because that's not the reason she came to mind. I was just trying to think of people that have the ROH connection that would seamlessly transition to the act that Undisputed Era already is. And I feel like she would just, we would see her in one appearance, one backstage segment, and it would just click, and we would go, wow, this was meant to be. This is perfect.
All right. Well, I mean, this episode is all about spoilers. We know all about Jackson Ryker now. So that's where we're yes. That's where we're at. Justin, anybody that we're forgetting?
I think Aaliyah is a bad choice, and I know that you don't agree that Kai is a winless jobber. But if you disagree with me when I say Aaliyah's a winless jobber, I'm going to send you back to school or something.
No, Aaliyah's almost completely winless. Like, she's almost...
Yeah, she's had, like, two...
By definition,
like, three or four years.
Yeah.
This is one of those things, like remember when Adam Cole... And remember when Undisputed Era first came out, and one of my big criticisms was, like, why would O'Reilly and Fish follow Cole when he's the one that doesn't win matches and they are, right?
Right, yeah, like, and agreed at that time, yep.
Like, why would you have Aaliyah join your stable? Why would you even watch? She's dead weight. You'd be like, at least Roddy handed you a championship. You know, that was his entry fee into the chapter, you know, if we're going to be talking biker gangs. That was his initiation. You're like, what's Aaliyah going to give you guys? More losses? Is she going to need Adam Cole to, you know, put on a wig and be her tag team partner so she can win a match? Like, how do you work this? And Adam Cole doesn't even need a wig. He just needs some mascara. And, I mean, Deonna Purrazzo, at least, she's only been on TV, I think, once, maybe twice since her return. And so you could sell her as somebody that, you know, joins Undisputed Era. I would like to see a lot more of her. I liked her the first time I saw her on NXT. The set, you know, on her return, she looks like she picked up some new moves and tweaked her look like slightly, mainly in her her ring gear, so she looked a lot less plain. So, I mean, Deonna Purrazzo, I think maybe could, you know, add some swagger. I like that. Nobody in Undisputed Era is like super gigantic. And so I think Deonna Purrazzo would physically look like she matched the rest of that team as an athletic, someone who can hit hard, but also can do some.
She also knows how to be snotty, which would work
perfect
for them.
Perfect.
Like, she can work both face and heel, but perfect, she's good at snotty. So that
So Deonna Purrazzo, I mean, like I said, I've only seen probably a total of four of her matches. But what I've seen, I'd like to see more of Deonna Purrazzo on my screen. I'm sorry, I forgot her first name, but Gonzalez, we saw a match with her a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. She was was something that looked like she had some potential. I'd like to see more of her. I fear that she might physically tower over like the rest of Undisputed Era.
Yeah, that is something they would not want. But
yeah,
in my idea, it might.
It's counterproductive. It's counterproductive. Yeah. It's like it would be like pairing Shawn Michaels with China. It's counterproductive.
Well, that's the exact comparison that I think of as to why it might work.
Right. As long as the guy in question can pull that off and is committed to the role of hiding behind that person, I think it can benefit both of them. Anyway, Dakota Kai, 7-8 this year. I didn't look at who she beat, but she's 7-8. So there you go.
No, that's better than Winless Jobber.
It's quite but it's not even. I said she was 50-50, and she's almost exactly 50-50. So one more win on TV next week, and Dakota is 8-8.
Is Vanessa Bourne advertised for next week?
No spoilers.
Yeah, okay, so she's going to beat Vanessa Bourne, great. Just so she can get to 50-50 and vindicate Kelly Wells.
If Jackson Riker's win is against Dakota Kai, I'm going to be very, very upset. Our main event, Aleister Black versus Johnny Gargano. In a cage! This was half the show. It seemed like the audience was a little fatigued, which is why I'm going to end up throwing to Tom first here. We did get, as we all thought, and Justin said in our group chat, he said, so who's going to be the one to interfere? Is it going to be Tommaso or is it going to be Candace? That really, really was the only question there, who it was going to be. It was Tommaso, as you might think, because maybe they'll end up doing this three-way. Who knows what they'll end up doing, but they did their DIY move. The audience just completely undercut the heat of the move by chanting DIY. Just shut up sometimes, audience, and let it be. But yeah, a good-ish match. These guys are capable of more, with more on the line and everything like that, but decent. I will ask Tom about the fatigue factor, because we did get the dueling chance, but for a while, this one was fairly quiet, so I want to ask about that. And Johnny gets a win. Not a big thing for him in big matches, but he gets this win. And are we headed for this three-way? Obviously, maybe Tom can't answer that. But Tom, go ahead on this match.
Yeah, this was the main event of the taping, as you might imagine. The same reason they do the demolition derby at the end of the night at the racetrack, because there's a lot of cleanup afterwards, and you don't want to keep the audience around waiting for that. But two other big matches that have yet to air were filmed beforehand, so that may have contributed to the fatigue. I know I certainly was feeling it myself at that time of night around 9:30, 10 p.m. after the show kicks off around 6:30. So, it was a fun novelty, though. I wrote it in my report as the first time this gimmick has been used on NXT TV, and Justin would be able to correct me if I'm wrong there. What I was forgetting, and thankfully my verbiage is correct, but I was forgetting that the cage match with Joe and Balor happened at Full Sail, because on last week's show I was talking about how this is the first time that they've done a cage in this venue, but that's not the case. I knew that it happened at a takeover, but I forgot that it was takeover the end, the last one that happened at Full Sail. The difference that you'll note if you watch go back and watch that match is that that one had cables that were securing the cage to the ceiling, that look very similar to the ones that we see on the main roster. The one that we saw tonight did not have those, so the walls weren't quite as sturdy. So there was at least that structural difference there. Once the promo segment between the three of those guys that we talked about a lot and that Zach Haydorn profiled on an episode of On the Canvas, once that segment was over, the panels of cage were brought out and they could be seen kind of behind where the commentators sit. So we could see them just being ready to be set up later in the night. The officials, ring crew, but mostly people like Drake Wirtz were the ones who were tasked with setting up the cage. I posted some pictures on my Twitter at Tom Staup of that happening. They had to hoist them up one by one, all 12 pieces of the cage. And poor Drake Wirtz almost slipped off the top rope at one point because he had to balance on the top rope and go around the ring while people were handing these panels to him. But he saved it. He was good. It was anyway, it was very novel to see that, because I don't think I've never seen a cage match in person before, and seeing one in that venue where I'd never really, you know, forgetting that it had happened at a takeover there, I had never really conceived of the fact that a cage could be set up in there. So it was neat, and it sort of brought out like a little bit of a, even though the audience wasn't as into it, and I was definitely feeling that vibe, and again I totally attribute that to just having had two big matches happen immediately prior to it, and it being a long night. And you can see that there's a shot of Johnny at the end of the match where he's leaning up against the cage, and you can see people filing out. Like, as soon as the bell rang, people were like, all right, that was it, we're done. And they're filing out. But it definitely, I was like, ooh, little bit of Roman Coliseum going on here, because I saw that cage, and I saw those guys get in that cage, and I was like, I think I might sort of understand cage fighting now. I'd never seen this in person before, only seen it on TV, and there's a different vibe. It's like once those guys get in there, you want to see them tear each other apart.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here, I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
I guess I'll hand the stick over for now.
Okay. All right. You get a lot of things there that we can't see. I love that we have somebody on the inside of this. For me, the main sticking points are always like the babyface deciding to come back into the ring and things like that. I can make an exception because like it's a fairly big size feud and things like that. I get that. And I can make an exception because there is no stated thing on the line, but obviously maybe something's on the line here because this is going to inform our takeover. So those kind of things can be fairly silly. But otherwise, yeah, I didn't take issue with much other than the DIY chant. But fun stuff, particularly in the back half of this. Justin, what'd you think of this match?
It started off well. It dragged at times. It didn't make sense to me that, you know, Gargano was so hot to have this match. And then he turns around and he spends most of the match trying to escape. You know, it's like you're either hot to have this match because you just want to beat up Aleister Black, in which case you don't try to leave the cage, you stay to beat him up. Or you force into this and you're playing the chicken heel and you just try to escape the cage every chance you get. So I just wasn't terribly thrilled with that approach to the match. The interference was predictable. It was well done. I feel like we're going for that. You know, we keep feeling we're heading towards that three-way. And this looks like it advances us to that three-way. So, I don't know. Cage matches tend to not do it for me. I get a lot more excited about them when they get rid of that stupid escape the cage rule. I just can't stand it. It is one of the worst rules of professional wrestling in terms of taking me out of the moment, because it just takes me out of the moment, because you're like, there's too many times where you're like, why in the world are you climbing the cage when you can just walk out the door? take the guy over to the other corner, smash his face into the turnbuckle, and run, screaming, open the door, and slide on out. Just baseball slide out and just slip on out. I, one of these days, I just want to see a cage match end in like 30 seconds like that. It doesn't make sense
would.
Why you would.
Because they would, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't stand this thing, this thing with the door.
I like
I would be okay with them escaping. Yeah, I'd be okay with escape the cage if they didn't have the door.
Yeah, okay. I like escaping from a door as an option for heels. Like, that makes sense. That's why it's there. But it does take away from the internal logic of any given match because you would just run for... And I know we've seen cage matches with escape rules where part of it was the fact that... Or at the very beginning, somebody runs straight for it and the other person's got to cut them off real quick. So I like it as an option for heels, but then you've got to make the face not do it because it's not a very babyface thing to do to escape through the door. You wouldn't see that. So you have to make them look dumb in order to not have them do it because the smart move would be to run straight for the door. So I get it as a necessary evil at times, but yeah, I like for it to just end in a pin or, you know, as this ended, but, yeah, cage matches are fine. And
I just think they could be so much more than what we get from them. And that's the disappointment for me is I look at how they're handled. I'm like, this could be a truly thrilling match, but instead we just get this very predictable match every time.
Yeah.
And I can't say that's too much about NXT somewhere because NXT's only had two cage matches, maybe three, not including War Games matches. So it's not like NXT hits this well so often that I'm tired of it. It's just because of the way they've established the rules of cage matches, the match flow and the match events, it's not as exciting as it should be. It should feel like this blow off to a feud. Instead, it feels like the first match in a feud where it's predictable.
Yeah.
Well, I liked that. I guess I was a little bit worried that when this match was announced that we were just going to get basically the exact same thing that we did at TakeOver, just with steel mesh in front of our eyes. And I liked that they worked a different match, based around the gimmick. I felt like it was more psychologically excellent than physically so, as their takeover match was. And their takeover match obviously excelled due in part to the psychology, but I thought that they focused on that even more here. So I liked what they were able to put forth in that regard. And that psychology, and of course, everything we've seen over the past year, plus building to this not reunion but cooperation between Gargano and Ciampa, which we've had in the back of our minds and we've mentioned on the show as a possibility, adds a lot of intrigue going forward. And I really thought that show closing angle was done so well that you could have closed the takeover with that and it would have been the impact would have been similar. I thought it was a really impactful cooperation between these two, and just I don't have any answers for where I think it's going to go, but I'm definitely along for the ride, and I think it adds yet another fresh new wrinkle in the Ciampa Gargano saga that helps continue to keep it fresh for me. I'm still very much on board the train there, and just from an in-person perspective, I'll also add that it was, well, even just on the show, I thought it was interesting that, you know, you had that moment where Gargano and Ciampa bumped into each other after hitting their move, and Gargano wasn't sure about it, and Ciampa's still kind of playing puppet master, seems to be getting exactly what he wants, and Gargano doesn't go for the pin right away. And Black is not somebody who is pinned easily, even when he has been pinned before. It's not easily. And yeah, he just got hit in the head with the cage door. He just went through a cage match, even though it wasn't a particularly grueling one compared to where we've seen him in the past. And he took this team move, but he was laying there for a while before the pin, and he was just out. So that was interesting to see for Black. And from that in-person perspective, he continued to lay there to the point where when I exited along with the rest of the crowd, pretty shortly thereafter, I hung out for like 2 or 3 minutes, just to take a couple pictures of him laying in the middle of the ring with the cage still set up. He just continued to lay there. Gargano sat, I forget where the show faded to black. I forget where the show faded to black here, but Gargano was just sitting there sort of almost like catatonic, like trying to take in exactly what had just gone down. And he did that for quite a while live. And then when he did get out of the ring, he did the baby face thing where you go around and meet and greet the kids in the front row. And like on principle, I kind of want to take issue with that. But Johnny is still that character who views himself as the good guy. So if little kids are going to say like, hey, Johnny, come over and give me a high five, I don't think he's going to brush him off. So Johnny's always been one of those. There are people when the show closing angle at a house show is built around somebody, there are people who will stick around and upset the breakdown crew because they got to get their job done. And this person's still saying hello to every single fan. And there are the people who will just brush you off and walk to the back. And Gargano is definitely the former.
All right, folks. That, I think, is our show. Black and Gargano with the main event. And next week, we'll finish up the old taping. And then we'll head toward Royal Rumble weekend. Be still my heart. Very excited about that. See where we're going to go from here. See what the injury to Dakota changes or doesn't change for what was going to be probably the six-woman match. No idea where that's going to head now. So, yeah, very excited to see it. And in the meantime, I think this was a pretty good show. I'm going to go Barry Horowitz and give us a pat on the back, a self-pat on the back, because I felt good about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was PWT Talks NXT. I am Kelly Wells. I'm your host, and I can be found all over social media at Spooky Milk. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staup doing those tapings reports at PW Torch, and that house show report is up there because even though I covered a lot of it during this show, you know you want to know who worked the security wand, and you want to know which wrestler's girlfriends were in the third row. So, you know, check that out.
All right. And then we also have Justin James.
Yeah, I'm Justin James. You can find me at Twitter at Justin_M_James. And I, too, am on my road to a house show January 5th here in the Carolinas. So I'll get to see all these people who don't make it to the TV that Tom's so infatuated with.
All right,
and maybe hanging out with their girlfriends.
Oh, right. Didn't think we'd go long, but did have a lot to unpack with those going up to the main roster. So, yeah, you know, you win a few, you lose a few. Hope you enjoyed, and we will see you in 7, gang. Thank you.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.